Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, April 7th, 2026. As always, we begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, Opinion. But this is not in Town Hall. This is on the front page of the paper, Section A. Opinion by Jim Dye. U of I Ammons at odds over higher ed funding's future. Legislation is pending in the Illinois House that would provide more higher education money to smaller state universities at the expense of the University of Illinois. Ironically, one of the legislation's chief sponsors is Urbana Democratic State Representative Carol Ammons, who represents the U of I in the General Assembly. Ammons has touted House Bill 1581, as establishing a funding formula that gives us a baseline that will allow us to build an adequate system for the future. The measure, which has several dozen co-sponsors, passed the House Higher Education Committee on March 26 and is awaiting further action. Under the legislation, the state would approve, on top of current spending, an annual $135 million increase in higher education spending for 15 years. The funds would be directed to individual schools through a specific, quote-unquote, equitable funding model based on perceived need and equity. Nicholas Jones, the number two man in the University of Illinois system, said the legislation doesn't take into consideration the vast responsibilities of the U of I's three campuses, or the fact that more than 50% of the state's 177,000 university students attend the University of Illinois. He said the U of I's Urbana campus would receive about 2.2% of the $135 million. Ultimately, this is going to weaken educational outcomes on which the state depends, Jones said. The legislation is patterned after the state's K-12 funding formula, which outlines future planned spending for public schools. Unfortunately, the state's fiscal problems have prevented full funding under the K-12 formula. Teachers' unions have charged the state $5 billion behind in its commitments. So it remains to be seen if the state actually will have the additional $135 million to add to existing higher education funding. If not, there's a formula for awarding lesser sums. The U of I finds itself on a political island in this debate, because other state schools which need and want budget increases stand to benefit. They are not concerned about the U of I. Representative Chapin Rose, a Mahomet Republican, said he's conflicted on the legislation because he represents both Eastern Illinois, which benefits, and the U of I, which doesn't. Everybody else in the bill does really well, but not the U of I, he said. Other smaller schools would enjoy larger percentage increases in funding. EIU, Eastern Illinois University, which has 6,300 students, would get a 22% hike from current funds. Chicago State, with 2,300 students, would get a 15% budget increase. Governor State, with 4,400 students, a 35% increase. And Western Illinois, 7,300 students, would receive a 21% increase. Larger schools like Illinois State, with 20,000 students, and Northern Illinois, nearly 16,000, would receive 19% and 15.5% increases, respectively. Increases are based on what are called adequacy gaps, quote-unquote. The difference between what bill supporters believe should be appropriated in the future and what actually has been appropriated. Despite its potential impact, the issue so far has been relatively low profile, confined largely to proponents and opponents of the plan. but it drew statewide attention last week when leaders of two prominent groups, Mark Densler of the Illinois Manufacturers Association and Jack Lavin of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, raised what they called serious concerns about the legislation. They said reforms of this magnitude should be thoughtful, data-driven, and carefully evaluated to ensure they strengthen the entire system. Citing vast research and public-private partnerships across its campuses, they said the University of Illinois connects public universities, industry partners, and communities across the state to advance entrepreneurship, research collaboration, and workforce training programs. They urged legislators to hit pause and take the time to get this thing right. Unmentioned, but equally important, is the competition for students and attendance imbalances among Illinois public universities, some of which have been struggling with declining enrollments. EIU and Western Illinois, both important economic engines in their communities, are down from previous highs. So too is Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, with 11,000 students, fewer than its one-time satellite campus, SIU Edwardsville, which has 12,600 students. Three schools, Chicago State, Governor State, and Northeastern Illinois, have fewer than 15,000 students combined. Jim Dye is a staff writer for the News Gazette. He can be reached by email at jdey@newsgazette.com. The next headline reads, Illini men's basketball. He's all in at Illinois. Underwood's agent. Nine seasons in, Final Four coach is committed to Illinois for the long haul. This article is written by Jeff D'Alessio, who can be reached by email at jdalessio@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Champaign. Not since Harv, that's H-A-R-V, Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T, a half century and change ago, has the leader of the Illini men's basketball program stepped away and never coached again. But that's exactly how Brad Underwood's agent sees his star client's career ending someday down the road, retiring from the profession while still at Illinois. I do. I would actually be very surprised if he didn't, Brett Just said on News Gazette Radio, powered by GTPS Insurance. I don't see that time coming anytime soon, like it's nothing we've talked about. He literally loves this place. He loves this team. He's loved the past several teams he's had. I think the fact that he gets to enjoy this with his family members, specifically assistant coach and son, Tyler, makes it all the more worthwhile and special. So I would be surprised if he didn't. I'll put it to you that way. Underwood's ninth season at Illinois ended last weekend with the program's deepest run in the NCAA tournament in 21 years, and with the 62-year-old coach's first Final Four appearance. For remaining on the job for a 10th season, Underwood will be rewarded with a $1.15 million retention bonus on July 1st, part of a six-year deal that U of I trustees signed off on in May of 2025. Underwood is also on the verge of joining the Big Ten's double-digit coaching club, whose six members include Tom Izzo, just finished his 31st season at Michigan State, Matt Painter, 21st season at Purdue, Dana Altman, 16th at Oregon, Chris Collins, 13th year at Northwestern, Greg Gard, 11th at Wisconsin, and Steve Piquiel, 10th at Rutgers. The number of Big Ten coaches with 2 years or less on the current job is longer. Eight, including Dusty May of Michigan, whose second season was one to remember. In the run-up to the Final Four, Underwood professed his longtime love affair with the program he now leads, saying he dreamt about doing this at Illinois and retelling the story of wife Susan buying a then 2-year-old Tyler a Brian Cook Illini jersey. His agent had heard the story long before Illinois athletic director Josh Whitman inquired about Underwood's availability following John Gross's firing in 2017. I was at a different client's game in Dayton, Ohio, the first four, when the job first opened, and I got a call from a 217 number, said Just, now a partner at William Morris Endeavor, whose lengthy client list includes UConn's Danny Hurley and Gino Arremia, among many others. I didn't know what was going on. I was all locked in as if I was coaching the game myself. I tend to do that. People that know me know I'm a little wound up, a little wound tight like that. So I'm getting ready to go into the game. It was actually USC against Providence, I remember, and I get this 217 number on my phone. I took the call. I usually don't take the calls, as a matter of fact. It was Josh, and he just kind of asked me if Brad would have an interest in the position, Just said. Underwood had been at Oklahoma State for all of one season, which culminated with a berth in the NCAA tournament. His Cowboys were preparing to meet Michigan, and Indianapolis of all places, Just said, when Whitman rang. So Josh and I had a quick chat. I tried not to show all my cards with my excitement level. I said, yeah, I think maybe there could be some interest. He's got a huge game in a couple days. Let me check in with him, Josh, and I'll get back to you. At the time, Whitman and Underwood's agent didn't know each other at all, Just said. And the delicate part of this stuff is, when do you tell your coach? Obviously, he's playing an NCAA tournament game at Oklahoma State against Michigan. I'm a big believer in I don't talk to my coaches on the day of games. So I just waited till the game was over, and then I said, hey, the bad news is, season's over. Tough one. You lost by 1 point to Michigan. Should have won the game, etc., etc. Here's a silver lining. Boom. And he was like, what? And the rest is history. And this article is front page center of the paper, with a bright, colorful photograph of Brad Underwood mingling with a bunch of basketball fans in orange and blue. The caption reads, Brad Underwood slaps hands with Illini fans while walking out before Saturday night's national semifinal game at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Underwood became the fourth Illinois coach to lead the Illini to the Final Four, a run that ended with a 71-62 loss against Connecticut. That photo was taken by Robin Scholes, R-O-B-I-N, last name Scholes, S-C-H-O-L-Z, for the News Gazette. Next up, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Final Four Wrap-Up. Delivering Saturday's commemorative print edition to Indianapolis proved to be a hit with fans in town for the Final Four. It took a relay in the wee hours to make it happen. We trucked bundles from Peoria to our distribution center in Champaign. At 4 a.m., Greg Pareto then drove stacks of newspapers to Brownsburg, Indiana, where our Hayden Rook took possession and proceeded to downtown Indianapolis. By breakfast, scores of Illini fans were flipping through an edition that included a 64-page Final Four special section and Illini cheer cards. Their faces lit up when they saw the newspaper, said Rook, R-O-O-K, Central Illinois Multimedia Group's Sports Marketing Revenue Director. In some circumstances, that was the real moment. We're in the Final Four, we're here, and it's about to go down. The rigmarole was well worth it on our end, and something we'll consider doing again moving forward. Questions, comments, suggestions, you can always email Jim Rosso at his email address, which is jrossow@newsgazette.com. And there are three photographs that accompany this article. Two of them are people just kind of standing with the newspaper. One is a middle-aged Caucasian male in shorts and an Illini shirt, marching Illini director Barry Hauser. And Then there's another photo of Robin Kaler, Chris Kaler, and Anna Simon holding the paper. Hayden Rook took all these photos for the News Gazette. And actually, the other one is just bundles and stacks of the newspaper fresh off the printing press. So congratulations to the News Gazette for completing that special newspaper edition. Next up, history. Area history. In 1926, a recently formed organization of railroad freight agents from Champaign and Urbana will be known as the Champaign-Urbana Local Freight Agents Association. It will work with the Midwest Shippers Advisory Board, which serves shippers and receivers of rail freight in Wisconsin, Iowa, Illinois, and Western Indiana. Its first regular meeting will be held May 11th at the Illinois Central Freight Office in Champaign. In 1976, Illinois college students will have to wait another year before they can buy beer at their student unions. Representative Robert Mann, a Democrat from Chicago, chairman of the House Higher Education Committee, said he was forced to abandon his bill to allow the sale of beer and wine on campuses of state colleges and universities because of an amendment that would allow property taxes to be levied on a University of College building in which beer or wine was sold. In 2011, the state of Illinois plans to save more than $1 billion on health benefits for state employees, their dependents and retirees through new contracts with managed care companies starting July 1st. But Urbana-based Health Alliance Medical Plans isn't one of the choices. The Illinois Department of Healthcare and Family Services announced its selections in the form of a declaration of intent to award contracts to new health plan administrators. Two would be separate HMO contracts going to Blue Cross Blue Shield, and two others would be open access plans administered by HealthLink and Personal Care. In international history, today's highlight. On April 7, 1994, a day after the presidents of Rwanda and Burundi died in a missile attack on their aircraft, the moderate Hutu Prime Minister of Rwanda, Agathe Uwilingmana, and her husband were killed by Rwandan soldiers. In the 100 days that followed, Hutu extremists slaughtered hundreds of thousands of minority Tutsi and Hutu moderates. Also on this date, in 1862, Union forces led by General Ulysses S. Grant and Major General Don Carlos Buell defeated Confederate forces at the Battle of Shiloh in Tennessee. That was in 1862. And lastly, in 1922, Interior Secretary Albert B. Fall signed a secret deal to lease U.S. Navy petroleum reserves in Wyoming and California to his friends, oilmen Harry S. Sinclair and Edward L. Doheny, in exchange for cash gifts. Fall would eventually be sentenced to prison on bribery and conspiracy charges in what became known as the Teapot Dome scandal. The next headline reads, which is actually a quick look at the weather forecast over the next few days. We've had some strange weather, highs and lows. Today, 46 degrees, mostly cloudy in the morning, then clearing, east winds around 10 miles per hour. Overnight, mostly cloudy, southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, warmer, Wednesday. The high will be 67, the low is 35. Partly sunny, south winds 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Overnight, partly cloudy. Thursday, the high will be 72, the low is 52, partly cloudy. Friday, the high will be 68, the low is 54. Showers are 60% likely, so that's Friday. And Saturday, the high will be 67, the low will be 46, mostly sunny. So we have sunny and some showers, some highs and some lows. as low as 46 and as high as 72. I guess that's spring for you in Illinois. Next up, Capital News, Illinois. Bill proposed to help uninsured with abortion access. Measure utilizes an ACA provision. This article is based out of Springfield. It's collectively written by Nicole Heitrek and UIS Public Affairs Reporting, or PAR. You can reach Capital News Illinois at their email address, which is news@capitalnewsillinois.com. Governor J.B. Pritzker and Democrats have added a new abortion access measure to their agenda that would allow people with limited or no insurance to get financial assistance for abortion care in Illinois. House Bill 5408 would take advantage of an underused provision of the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, that requires insurance plans that offer coverage for abortions in instances that go beyond rape, incest, and life of the mother to collect at least $1 a month from enrollees to cover the cost of abortion claims. Federal law requires the insurers to segregate that money and use it only for abortion care. Illinois' bill would allow the state to exert greater authority over the funds. The bill is meant to give insurers clarity about how to use the money they collect, according to Representative Anna Moeller, a Democrat from Elgin, who sponsored the bill. She also said, another reason for the bill is because the state doesn't have a clear picture of the amount of funds being collected. Similar bills have passed in California and Maryland and are under consideration in Massachusetts and Washington State to require the insurance industry to release these funds and put them into these kinds of grant programs so that people can access these services if they don't have insurance or they're underinsured, Moeller said in an interview with Capital News Illinois. So I think maybe the insurance industry didn't have clarity on how to use it. In California, actual amounts collected haven't been reported publicly, but analysts have estimated it could be more than $100 million. When Maryland's law was expanded in 2025, insurers had collected $25 million. Under its law, the Maryland Health Department allocates up to $2.5 million annually. In Illinois, Moeller, spelled M-O-E-L-L-E-R, said there was not a lot of clarity when it comes to fund balances. The Illinois Department of Insurance said it was unable to speculate about pending legislation and didn't provide an estimate for how much money has been collected in these accounts. HB, or House Bill 5408, would require insurance companies to report to the Department of Insurance how much money is in these separate accounts, how much has been spent, and to transfer remaining funds to the newly created State Abortion Access Fund. After that, the Illinois Department of Public Health could use the money to award grants for abortion providers to cover uninsured and underinsured individuals through a new grant program. Mueller presented the bill at the House Human Services Committee on March 25th, where it passed 8-4 along partisan lines and was placed on the House calendar for a second reading. My colleagues, we all understand, especially on the Democratic side, how important it is to provide a place for women to access reproductive health care, especially since these rights are under assault in so many places in our country, Mueller said. Federal law prohibits federal money, being used for abortion care unless the pregnancy is a result of rape or incest or the abortion is needed to save the life of the mother. But states have more leeway. Illinois already requires state Medicaid, ACA plans, and private insurance to cover abortions. One moment. Mueller said this bill is just another way the state can support people who need abortions for reasons that don't meet federal guidelines. Advocates said it also creates a new funding stream to help providers keep up with demand. Opponents of the Illinois bill point to December 2025 guidance from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid that changed the way funds can be managed and used. Although health policy attorneys argue that guidance misinterprets the language in the statute and violates the law. The Illinois Life and Health Insurance Council opposes the Illinois measure. Kate Morthland, its policy and advocacy director, said in a statement. As a quick note, this story, among others, contains original reporting by News Gazette staff. If you are not a subscriber, please consider becoming one, because local journalism is only possible with your support. A subscription to the News Gazette plays a vital role in making this reporting possible. Thank you for your support and helping us continue to connect our community. The next headline reads, Village of Oakwood, tax-based support proposed for ambulance service. Lack of volunteers prompting possible ballot referendum. This article is written by Jennifer Bailey, B-A-I-L-E-Y, who can be reached by email at jbailey@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Oakwood. Oakwood Emergency Rescue Service Director Zach Weddle, W-E-D-D-L-E, says he doesn't like it either that local residents could see another tax to support local ambulance service. As an Illinois resident, that's the last thing I want to see. But this is something absolutely needed, Weddle said. Like many other emergency service departments, Oakwoods has had trouble finding volunteers and has been struggling to continue to be self-sustaining financially. We've always been village-owned, Weddle said. We've always been self-supportive through billing, insurance, and all of that. It also had primarily been a volunteer service up to this point. We've gone to a staff model because there's no volunteers, he said. Nobody is volunteering anymore. To get an ambulance to folks, we have to staff. As a result, there's a greater overhead cost. We simply don't have the funding to keep operating an ambulance like this without becoming tax-based, Weddle said. Under a proposed referendum, the ambulance service would be reformed into a special service district that would then be taxpayer-funded instead of a village-owned entity. A special service tax of 0.015% would be levied at about 15 cents per $100 of assessed valuation of residential properties and about 80 cents to $1.10 per agricultural acre. If approved, estimates indicate the average Oakwood homeowner would pay another $150 to $200 on their tax bill. Weddle said this is in an effort to ensure the ambulance service remains viable into the future and can continue to provide emergency medical services to Oakwood, Fithian, Muncie, Collision, Fairmount, Jamaica, and Seidel. The public can have its questions answered and learn more about the proposed November ballot referendum at a meeting set for 6:30 p.m. Thursday at Oakwood Village Hall, located at 106 South Scott Street. Weddle said in talking to some members of the public and other fire departments and representatives, including with townships, a general consensus seems to show a pretty big support base that it needs to happen. They won't know, however, until they take it to the ballot and voters. They will be going door to door in some of these areas to petition for signatures to ensure its success in the community. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this day, Tuesday, April 7th, 2026. Thank you for listening. It's always a pleasure to read with you. I'll be back to read part two of the News Gazette shortly. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful day.